Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show, Hayden Crabtree.
Victor, thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Hayden, we've known each other a number of years, and I'm excited for this conversation because you have a particular story that is just chock full of lessons. But before we dive into those details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah. So in college, I effectively read a little purple book that we've all read called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, realized that I didn't want to go the traditional route. So with that, I picked up a mentor and went to work for free, started skipping class in college, and eventually found myself in the middle of building a portfolio of mini storage, self-storage facilities around the Southeast. Started working for equity in deals and ended up buying 500,000 square feet over the course of a couple years of self-storage right around the time I graduated college in my early 20s, which just led to so much experience, so much real-world knowledge, more than I ever could have picked up in a classroom. And that led me to writing a book called Skip the Flip, just talking about my experience, my take on real estate investing. Specifically, the value add commercial route is what that book is about, and how I've really grown my portfolio, starting with nothing up into, you know, the portfolio that I have today and the kind of deals that we'll be talking about. So, long story short, started with nothing in college, really had the desire, the urgency to learn and to build my real estate portfolio, pretty much did whatever I could, whatever it took in order to make that happen. And so today I still own self-storage across the Southeast, done developments, I've done value adds, done self-storage in addition to RV storage, truck parking. And that's led me into some other interesting realms between some software that I own, but more specifically these days, cost segregation business, which powers are just tremendous. So I'm a bit of an entrepreneur that has my hands in a lot of buckets, but really at my core, I consider myself a self-storage investor.
Along your journey, you focused on boat and RV storage, and in particular, a geographic area. You found that along the Gulf Coast of Florida, that in many cases, it was a shortage. I think your first project that you did independently was in Babcock Ranch. That was creatively done, if I remember correctly. And then you decided to widen the net from there, correct?
Yeah, so just happens to run across an off-market deal across the street from Babcock Ranch, which is America's first solar city, really cool, multi-billion dollar, 20-year project just outside of Fort Myers, Florida, where I found my first deal. And I found the deal, you know, in like year zero of this 20-year, multi-billion dollar project that was happening right across the street. So certainly the tide was in my favor on that deal. And yeah, it was done creatively, where the seller of that deal wanted a little more money than it was worth, but I knew the long-term rates of that property and value of that property would do nothing but go up because of the growth happening literally directly across the street. I mean, you can now stand on my property, throw a baseball across the highway and hit a house that's part of a 20,000 house community. So that deal, I decided to give him his price on my terms, as so many people say. That was a deal that we did a lease option or a lease purchase. I had the option to do it, but I know I would end up purchasing it. So I went in there, started that deal. It was $22,000-ish a month of 10 acres of kind of uncovered RV storage in the area. And within, you know, 60 days, we'd raise the income by $8,000 a month. And fast forward today, and we pretty much doubled the income on that deal. And at that time, we ended up going ahead and executing that option to purchase. So now we own that land. And even on the back end, we negotiated some owner financing. So it's been a really cool deal with a lot of really great financing. But that's the power of win-win deals when you're working directly with sellers. That would have never happened with, you know, a broker or an agent in between it. And, you know, that's why I get out on the streets and talk to people.
Now, was that deal in particular that gave you a boots on the ground perspective on the supply demand dynamics in the Fort Myers area that got you into this next deal that we're going to talk about that is super interesting to me?
Yeah. So that first deal that I did, it was mainly uncovered storage. I want to say there are 26 covered spots. And what I just noticed immediately about that, number one, was just the variation between how much somebody was willing to pay for a uncovered spot, you know, say $80 a month to park their boat or their RV just outside, but they'd be willing to pay $250, $300 a month to park under what is relatively a very simple structure. You know, it's very, very low cost to build in terms of the building and structure itself. I like to call them canopies. So, you know, I immediately, within just a couple of months, noticed these covered products are always full. We have a wait list for them. It's all people want. And it attracted a more premium clientele, somebody who, you know, was less price sensitive and really at the end of the day just wanted to store their $500,000 boat or RV with no worries or concerns. And so I went to the county to see if this plat that I had, that I'd got 10 acres, I mean, we had a lot of room to build this out. And I went to Charlotte County there to try to understand, hey, can I build more canopies on this parcel that I already control? And, you know, if you've never done any development in Florida, then you don't really understand what FLU is, which is future land use. But effectively, you know, the state has set this map where in the year 2050, they want to know what every single parcel is going to look like. And my parcel in particular was not allowed to be intensified because in the future, they wanted my parcel to be agricultural for whatever reason. So I quit beating down that door and eventually just said, well, I'll go find a different parcel that I can build more RV canopies on. And I'll grow my business that way, just through a second location. And so, you know, after looking around, I found a really sweet parcel in the middle of Fort Myers, actually, right off of a main highway that traffic count was really good. And the great thing about this parcel that I found is that it was 6 acres, but it was already developed. They used to build trusses there, and they had this 30,000 square feet of canopies already on this parcel. It was already all paved. It was already all fenced. I mean, it is a real estate investor's dream, and I got it at an amazing price. You know, this was in 2019, late 2019. We locked up the deal on that parcel to buy in the fall, I think around September. And I knew two things. This was my first development, and I've heard that developments were risky. And so I wanted to do everything I could to mitigate risk. This is a deal that was requiring close to 7 figures of equity, which at that time in my career, I did not have. I knew that I was going to have to convince some bankers that I was a guy who had never done a development. So that presented one set of challenges. And the other thing is I knew I was going to have to convince investors that I was going to mitigate this risk. So what did I do? I asked for a long due diligence on this parcel, and I got all of my engineering meetings with the counties and everything done beforehand so that I could go to the bank, I could go to the investors, and I could say, look at the awesome returns on this project. I know that developments normally come with a high level of risk, and so here's how I've mitigated my risk. I have a fully approved, at that time it was called a limited development order, still is, but when you have a parcel that's already been somewhat developed, instead of getting a development order, you have a limited development order. So the day we bought the property, I had a fully approved limited development order in hand to build 60,000 square feet of canopies. And it what was looking like an absolute home run of a deal. I mean, with my other location, the day we opened, I could have reached 35, 40% occupancy immediately just from the wait list I had for my other property. Plus, in this location, I could have gotten even higher rates. So we were underwriting, the market was telling us the price for a covered 40-foot RV slip was $350 to $399 in the market. So it just looked like an absolute home run of a deal. We bought it on Valentine's Day of 2020. Okay, so we're entering this era that we all know was just a really interesting time. But what happened was the 2 weeks after we bought the property, I was meeting with my GC on the site. And again, this is my first development. And we go to talk about, we had the development order, but we go to talk about putting the building permits in for approval. And when we go to put the building permits in, we get an email back from the department there that had approved our limited development order. And the email, I could pull it up and read it, but the email effectively says, hey, so sorry about this inconvenience, but that limited development order we gave you, that was a clerical mistake. You need to restart the entire process. And so here I am, you know, I've just pitched to my bank, I've just pitched to my investors that this is a low risk deal. And then I get an email that says, hey, your whole foundation of what you pitched, we're going to yank it away based off of a clerical error. right? The clerical error wasn't like, hey, I did something wrong in my application. It was simply the person who reviewed my plans had mistaken my address with another one, and they meant to approve the other address and not mine, somebody else who was in the building permit. So as you can imagine, I'm sitting here going, what in the world do I do? I'm effectively starting from ground zero, and how do I move this forward? And so I contact them, the county there, and I say, okay, well, it's a clerical error, but can, you know, what needs to happen in order to get it approved? They said, well, we actually never swung your plans by the fire department, never got their sign off on it. So we're fine to do the sign off, but at the end of the day, we need to make sure that the local fire chief will approve your plans. And so I say, okay, how do we do that? And so they say, we'll send it over to the fire chief right now. And so get sent over to the fire department. Of course, they take multiple weeks in order to review it. But when I hear back, you know, they're telling me all your buildings here, they need to be sprinkled. It's up to fire code that you need to sprinkle all your buildings. And I'm thinking, these are RV canopies. There's no walls on them. It's a metal pole coming out of the ground and metal roof. And so I'm thinking to myself, these aren't buildings. These are canopies. And so we go back and forth over a building versus a canopy, which is a little bit open to interpretation. And then they say, okay, well, you know, maybe we won't make you sprinkle it, but what we need you to do is we need you to put a fire hydrant beside each and one of these RV canopies. So on a 6-acre parcel that's already paved to run a fire main with enough pressure to run a fire hydrant, it was again going to be something like an additional $400,000 or $500,000. I just get so fed up. I'm really a little bit uncertain on what to do. I just contact a lawyer and I just say, hey, I feel like these guys are doing me wrong. You know, what kind of leverage do I have here given that I bought the property based off of an approval that they have given me? I mean, I have a signed piece of paperwork. I have an email saying everything's been approved, and then they revoke that. And in that process of talking to the lawyer, I learned that the government owes you nothing unless they violate your constitutional rights. And it is not a constitutional right for a limited development order to be approved. And so after paying some attorney's fees and seeing what we could do, and I just got completely stressed out of my mind. I mean, I was 23, 24 years old at this time. And I looked in the mirror one morning during all this and I had my first gray hair, you know, and it was just really, really, really impacting me. So after, and this is several months into the process now, I kind of just really sat down and thought about what it is that I could do. And I decided to book a plane ticket. At this point, all my investors are wondering what's happening. My bank is wondering what's happening. We're not making any progress. Of course, the virus has spread around the world. Just a lot of uncertainty. My suppliers are shooting me emails like, hey, if you don't place a deposit, then material prices are going up. Labor prices are going up. My project is growing more and more out of budget, and I haven't even made any progress, you know, and I'm feeling like a complete failure as a real estate developer. And I'm like, okay, I now understand what risk is. And so I'm thinking about how can I fix this, right? How can I fix this? And at the end of the day, I decided to book a plane ticket because the sole person holding me up was the fire department. They weren't willing to offer any sort of leeway. And, you know, to me, they're just thinking this is just another guy, you know, trying to skirt by and avoid fire safety or whatever. And so I end up flying down to Fort Myers. Again, I'm in Atlanta, fly down to Fort Myers, grab a rental car, drive directly to the fire chief and just ask, you know, walk in and say, hey, can I speak with the fire chief? And I ended up sitting down with him and just explaining the entire situation to the fire chief and just told him like, hey, you know, this is what's happened. I'm in a bad spot. I understand you have a job. I understand you have a responsibility. How can we find a middle ground here where we can both take this away as a win? And so that was my strategy. And I think showing up in person to talk with them and to just explain my side rather than fire off angry emails or how could you do this to me, that made all the difference in the world. And at the end of the day, I learned that certain fire codes are open to interpretation. That move in itself got him to interpret fire codes on my behalf that made it where I had to do a little bit of additional work. I had to add an additional curb cut to a road that I didn't have access to before, but it saved, you know, that was maybe a $10,000 or a $15,000 expense versus a multiple $100,000 expense that I would have incurred otherwise. So many lessons learned inside of that project.
That one plane ticket basically saved your project.
That one plane ticket, that one day saved the project. Absolutely.
What was it that the fire chief said when you were meeting with them face to face that softened their stance? Or what was it that you said that softened their stance?
You know, I can't, I can't recall exactly what was said that softened the stance, but that look of when I walked in and, you know, I mean, emails had been going back and forth about the issue at hand, right? But when I walk in and I say, hey, my name's Hayden Crabtree, I'm the guy we've been emailing about this problem, you could just see the whole like, whoa, wait a second. Like you're a human. You took the energy, the effort to show up. I just think it went a long way that I think that to some degree, the people in government just kind of look at real estate developers like, oh, these flashy guys, they're always thinking we're doing a bad job. And so to like just show up and to have that conversation, I think went a long way. I don't think it was anything in particular that I said. I think it was more the goodwill of coming down here to talk to you in person about it. You know, I think like when I'm doing deals, when I'm doing off-market deals, I see all the difference in the world and the relationship you have with the seller whenever you show up in person. You can talk to them on the phone, you can, you know, do whatever. But when you show up and you talk to somebody in person, I just think it takes that relationship to another level. And that's exactly what happened with the fire chief.
I've believed for quite some time that, especially over the last couple of years, we've become so accustomed to doing everything electronically, Zoom meetings, Teams meetings, conference calls, and so on, that very few people take that extra time to use the face-to-face process. And I actually believe that because face-to-face is becoming so much more rare, it is actually a differentiator.
I'd agree. Yeah. I mean, so many people just want quick and easy. And in person these days is not quick nor easy, but it means a lot. You know, it's kind of like handwritten letters versus, you know, anything else, an email. It just stands out to people. It as you're saying, it's a differentiator in today's market.
Absolutely. Well, I love that story. It's just packed full of so many powerful lessons. And I can only imagine, you know, your first development deal, having it go sideways like that through no fault of your own. You arguably had grounds. I'm sure you could have found a litigator who would have recommended suing fire marshal or recommended at least suing the planning department for having given you an incorrect approval and then you making a decision on the basis of that information, because clearly you were harmed, you were damaged by that. And you can point to those damages very clearly. So you could have easily gone down the path of litigation, and somehow through some stroke of good fortune or good judgment, you managed to avoid that path.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the set the ego aside, forget the feelings that you've been wronged and just focus on the mission is what was most important there, right? I mean, it's very easy today. And a lot of people today want to say, oh, well, I was wronged in this way. You know, I want to get revenge or I want to get payback. At the end of the day, I just wanted to do my development, right? And so to set that at the top of my list of like, what's most important here and how do I accomplish this mission? How do I accomplish the mission of, you know, having a successful project for my bank, for my investors? That was the clear winner if it would have worked, right? Now, if it wouldn't have worked, if I'd have flown down there and he, you know, still not had any leeway, and who knows what the end result would have been. But just think about the mission that comes first and how do you accomplish that?
I love it. Well, Hayden, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah. So if anybody wants to connect, I'm pretty active on Instagram. It's at Hayden Crabtree. If you want to pick up a copy of my book, it's on Amazon. Again, Skip the Flip. And if anybody is piqued by the interest of cost segregation studies, then you could find that out at my company, remotecostseg.com.
Fantastic. Well, Hayden, love the story and great to catch up. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Hayden Crabtree. All of the links will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.